It's the Book of the Month on Southside Broadcasting with Jenny Finch and a team of top writing talent.
This month's book is Ancillary Justice by Anne Leckie. Anne Leckie's debut novel burst onto the science fiction scene in 2013 to enormous critical acclaim. Written in the form of a space opera set thousands of years in the future, it follows the search for revenge by Breck, the only surviving piece of consciousness from a multi-minded starship, the Justice of Torren. In Leckie's universe, all of humanity is ruled by one race, the ruthless and all-powerful Raj, who invade other planets and impose their will with brutal efficiency. Many of their captured opponents are absorbed into the artificial intelligence of the warring starships, becoming extensions or ancillaries of the central consciousness. The Justice of Torren is destroyed by Treachery, and Brack's search for those responsible is the main focus of the novel, running parallel with events from 19 years previously that led to the ship's demise.
The body lay naked and face down, a deathly grey, spatters of blood staining the snow around it. It was minus 15 degrees Celsius and a storm had passed just hours before. The snow stretched smooth in the warm sunrise, only a few tracks leading into a nearby ice block building, a tavern, or what passed for a tavern in this town. There was something itchingly familiar about that outthrown arm, the line from shoulder down to hip, but it was hardly possible I knew this person. I didn't know anyone here. This was the icy back end of a cold and isolated planet, as far from Rajai ideas of civilization as it was possible to be. I was only here, on this planet, in this town, because I had urgent business of my own. Bodies in the street were none of my concern. Sometimes I don't know why I do the things I do. Even after all this time, it's still a new thing for me not to know, not to have orders to follow from one moment to the next. So I can't explain to you why I stopped and with one foot lifted the naked shoulder so I could see the person's face. Frozen, bruised and bloody as she was, I knew her. Her name was Savardhan Vendai, and a long time ago she had been one of my officers. A young lieutenant, eventually promoted to her own command, another ship. I'd thought her 1,000 years dead, but she was undeniably here. I crouched down and felt for a pulse, for the faintest stir of breath. Still alive. Savardhan Vendai was no concern of mine anymore. Wasn't my responsibility, and she had never been one of my favourite officers. I'd obeyed her orders, of course, and she had never abused any ancillaries, never harmed any of my segments, as the occasional officer did. I had no reason to think badly of her. On the contrary, her manners were those of an educated, well-bred person of good family. Not toward me, of course. I wasn't a person. I was a piece of equipment, part of the ship. But I had never particularly cared for her. I rose and went into the tavern. The place was dark, the white of the ice walls long since covered over with grime or worse. The air smelled of alcohol and vomit. A barkeep stood behind a high bench. She was a native, short and fat, pale and wide-eyed. Three patrons sprawled in seats at a dirty table. Despite the cold, they wore only trousers and quilted shirts. It was spring in this hemisphere of Nilt, and they were enjoying the warm spell. They pretended not to see me, though they had certainly noticed me in the street and knew what motivated my entrance. Likely one or more of them had been involved. Savardhan hadn't been out there long, or she'd have been dead. "I'll rent a sledge," I said, "and buy a hypothermia kit."
One of the most interesting aspects of this book, and the two that follow it, is the universe Leckie has created. There are glimpses of strange planets and different cultures scattered throughout as the all-conquering Raj march across the galaxy and the impact of the Empire is portrayed with great honesty. There is no doubt in the reader's mind that the Raj Empire is a great evil, and this leads to some ambiguity in the reader's mind. It is difficult sometimes to feel sympathy for the main character when they are part of the ruthless destruction of other planets, especially when their actions and thoughts are set out in the flashback sections. Breck may have a human body, but is not human in any sense we might recognise. One of the main features of this novel is its lack of gender specifics. The Raj are gender neutral, and Lecky refers to all characters as she, unless corrected by members of other races. Breck herself finds it difficult to use appropriate language when talking to other species, and this is one of the most criticised aspects of the novel. Many characters have similar names or are designated by numbers, and Breck's narrative jumps from one ancillary to another in places, making it difficult to follow. The lack of, or sudden change to, gender-specific language makes this even more confusing in places and tends to detract from the story.
I had been in pieces, and at the time only one segment had ever known that such a thing was possible. That for an instant, Lieutenant Orme's life had hung uncertain on the outcome of that moment. I wasn't entirely sure that segment wouldn't have turned its gun on Ananda Minai instead.
It probably wouldn't have. Divine, I am not a person. If I had shot the Lord of the Rach, no thing would have changed. I was sure, except that not only would Lieutenant Orne still be dead, I would be destroyed. 2S would take my place, or a new 1S would be built with segments from Justice of Torren's holds. The ship's AI might find itself in some difficulty, though more likely my action will be blamed on my being cut off. People often think they would have made the noblest choice, but when they find themselves actually in such a situation, they discover matters aren't quite so simple.
As I said, God forbid, I will comfort myself with the delusion that you would have shot the Minai bastard first.
Divine, I cautioned. She could say nothing in my hearing that might not eventually reach the ears of the Lord of the Rach.
Let her hear. Tell her yourself. She instigated what happened last night. Whether the target was us, or the Tanmind, or Lieutenant Orne, I don't know. I have my suspicions, which... I'm not a fool.
Divine, I said. Whoever instigated last night's events, I don't think things happened the way they wished. I think they wanted open warfare between the upper and lower cities, though I don't understand why. And I think that was prevented when Den's Eye told Lieutenant Orne about the guns.
I think as you do, said the head priest. And I think Jen Shinnan knew more, and that was why she died.
I'm sorry your temple was desecrated, Divine, I said. I wasn't particularly sorry Jen Shinnan was dead, but I didn't say so.
The Divine turned away from me again. I'm sure you have a lot to do, getting ready to leave. Lieutenant Orne needn't trouble herself calling on me. You can give her my farewells yourself. She walked away from me, not waiting for any acknowledgement.
Lieutenant Scott arrived for supper with a bottle of arak and 2-7 Issus. Your relief won't even reach Cold Vess until midday, she said, breaking the seal on the bottle. Meanwhile, the 7 Issus stood stiff and uncomfortable on the ground floor. They had arrived just before I'd restored communications. They'd seen the dead in the Temple Vict, had guessed without being told what had happened, and they had only been out of the holds for the last 2 years. They hadn't seen the annexation itself.
Hillary Justice made history when published by winning the 2014 Hugo, Nebula and Arthur C. Clarke Awards, as well as the British Science Fiction Award in 2013 and the Locus Award for the Best First Novel the following year. This unprecedented success led a number of critics to hail Lecky as the successor to the late Ian M. Banks, and the book has been generally very well received by the science fiction community. Many readers agree with this, lauding the complexity of the background and the skill with which Lecky handles the time shifts in the early part of the novel. However, a significant number are less enthusiastic and found it confusing and even dull in places. Certainly it is a very impressive novel for a debut, and the emergence of a new female writer on the stage of space opera is to be applauded.
Being selected by Jenny Finch and her team for the Book of the Month is quite frankly one of the pinnacles of any writer's ambition. Don't ask me how I know this. I just do.
In today's crowded world, it's sometimes hard to get heard.
And sometimes you need a little extra push to be heard. That's where Manila PR can help. We specialise in online radio and press for independent bands, with prices to match, and have been doing so for the last decade. So if you have a noise to make, make it with Manila. Visit manilapr.com now.
These drugs affect 130,000 people in England and Wales each year. Here's a recipe that can dramatically decrease your chances of strokes.
Excellent. I better get a pen.
167 grams of calcium, 245
grams of magnesium, 3 grams of zinc. Hang on. Hang on, slow down.
Remember, any more than one tablespoon could kill you. Any less than one tablespoon could kill you.
Right, what was the recipe?
That's the recipe.
Oh,
if you would like a more simple solution, you can always call Pharma Nord on 01670 519989.
All right.
Or visit the website pharmanord.co.uk.
Let me see if I can jot that down. What was the number again?
01670 519989. Or visit the website pharmanord.co.uk.
And how do you spell Pharma Nord, I wonder?
pharmanord.co.uk.
It's almost as if I'm having a conversation with the radio.
Don't be silly, that's impossible.
Pharma Nord, winning the war of nutrition.
You're listening to a Southside Broadcasting podcast. Southside Broadcasting is a media company which aims to provide a wide range of features from the rural, health and lifestyle worlds. You can regularly listen to entertaining podcasts with interviews and correspondents from Los Angeles, Nashville, New York and London. You can take part in our Book of the Month features, grab some great nutritional advice, enjoy broadcasts from the Great Yorkshire Show, the Lincolnshire Show, and enjoy local football reviews with our regular feature, Fly Me to the Moon. You can even hear a BAFTA award-winning director drive a train full of teddy bears. You can listen to these and many more podcasts at southsidebroadcasting.podbean.com. For further information on how you can join over 35,000 people who regularly download our podcasts, call us on 01642 854 742 or email info@southsidebroadcasting.com now.
From the magic of the mind to the excellence of eternity, this is the Book of the Month podcast from Southside Broadcasting, a whole new area of broadcasting excellence.
Marvellous. And Jenny, hard science fiction text, I think, to work through. Not hard as in difficult to understand, but as hard science as opposed to mild science fiction.
Definitely, yes.
Key question, of course, is what would our ace correspondent and music correspondent and writer and indeed keen Borough fan Rob Nichols made of it? Is ancillary justice the kind of thing you want to actually say? If only there was any justice, we'd have a decent referee who actually had more experience in refereeing games at Sheffield.
Absolutely, yes. Indeed. No, I really enjoyed reading Ancillary Justice very much. It was a good break away from the football injustices that we've have been invoked on us this week.
Let's not get started on that, Rob. We'll do that for another programme entirely. But in terms of things, would you like to share with us your thoughts on the novel? And it's the first in the trilogy, of course. Would you be tempted to go and get the second and third?
Yeah, I might indeed. When I find out that something's a trilogy, I like to find out at the end rather than the start because it demotivates me a bit, really. Yeah. That I like a book to come to a conclusion of sorts. But basically, this is very much you can read this as very much a standalone, and you realise that the person who's writing it has got a great deal more to tell us about this kind of universe in the future. And the different people involved, the different empires, and I very much enjoyed the sort of quest element of it, and some of the concepts of it's of people sort of all being the idea that a spacecraft can actually be a person or a sentient being,
consciousness.
And all those sort of questions that come from that, and how it's not quite clones, but you've got an army of people that are the same person, and the question of what is a person, and the differences between humans and artificial intelligence, things that that we've been questioning quite a lot in recent years, haven't we? So. Mm.
I could go back, given that it won the Arthur C. Clarke Award back in 2014, that Clarke himself with the HAL 9000 computer did the same thing in 2001, A Space Odyssey. It won all of the major science fiction awards in 2014. It instantly established Anne Leckie as one of the major voices within the genre. Would you say rightly so, Rob? I mean, I suspect from what you've been saying, yeah, actually, good.
Yes, rightly so, because she's dealing with pretty big concepts, but it is... when it comes down to it, it's a very good read. It's very easy to understand what she's throwing at us. But that's not to simplify it, because there are a lot of things going on. But you grab them as you're going through it, and sometimes you can go into a sci-fi book and just be quite bewildered at the start. It can take you like 150 pages to understand the slightest thing about it, and that can be quite off-putting, but this isn't the case. It's really clever the way you're taken through it, and there's a quest that's central to it, which is exciting and draws to a great sort of, you know, it's going to come to a good a climactic conclusion, but very enjoyable read, and I think that's really important, isn't it?
I'm smiling here, Rob, because we were having a chat with Jenny obviously beforehand, and it's fair to say we kind of thought it was more of a difficult read as opposed to. I mean, Jenny, you've been listening to Rob there, and mm-hmm. it would seem that all our fears about it not sort of being an easy assimilated text, etc., as in a Borg assimilation, gone.
Yes. I've read a great deal of science fiction of all types, and I found it really quite difficult to follow the narrative thread because there are a lot of concepts.
Maybe we were thinking too hard, Jenny.
Maybe we were. There was a lot of stuff that's been introduced, and it's explained after the stuff has been used in the book for the first time. I think if you were a novice reader, you wouldn't get through it, which is a shame.
Although Rob clearly...
It's got a cracking ending. Yeah.
Rob, I mean, you might disagree with that, Rob, from what you were saying.
Well, maybe it's because I've been well schooled by the pair of you in some of the books that we've read. I remember what was the book that we read? Was it last year, the year before, about grass?
Yes,
Sherry S. Tepper.
Yeah,
which is a fantastic book, but I felt that for me, it took me an awful lot of pages to get anything to do. I couldn't understand anything about this. I was tossed into a world that's just. I was bewildered by it for a long time through it, whereas I could still get the adventure story of this, I think, from the very start.
Yeah.
A recent interview with SFX magazine, Anne Leckie actually is talking about her first ever fantasy novel, The Raven Tower, and has also, in the light of current sort of political events, says that she thinks the current situation may insinuate itself into her work. I would not be surprised, she says, if the stuff that I was writing was addressing the Trump situation in America in some way, because I don't think I can escape doing that.
Yeah.
And a random fact, apparently she once sang at a Barry Manilow concert as part of a choir. It was super super weird and interesting. He turned around and pretended he was conducting. Maybe that's Barry Manilow as Esquan. Extraordinary. In case the listener is wondering about the powers of gender fluidity we demonstrated in the reading, it must be pointed out that it was actually actress Rachel Teat who was doing some of the reading there, not just myself.
I thought you were doing such a good job with that voice, Alex.
I did try, but at the end of the day. I mean, what about gender fluidity, Rob? Because that was something which, I mean, we're kind of more and more aware of it these days. But did you think it was effectively addressed in terms of this, in terms of the pronouns of he, she, he, and so on?
Yeah, well, I found that confusing. I've got to admit at first, but yeah, really interesting the way it's addressed. Absolutely, in an empire where it doesn't count for anything, or it's basically ambivalent as to where you are, and you use these pronouns. And you mentioned the choir, and of course, singing has a key part in this book, doesn't it? Mm. Which is really interesting as well. A key part in maybe. Bearing out that somebody, that there's the human parts as opposed to the artificial intelligence, perhaps. But that was something I'd never come across before. That whether somebody is a he or a she, and that everyone, and it keeps, it's very fluid. Yeah, and really interesting.
Although, again, acknowledging the research, as you pointed out, Jenny, Ursula K. Le Guin has actually addressed this in Left Hand of Darkness.
Oh, yes.
And indeed, sentient spaceships as well has been put forward. But it's always difficult to get the absolute originality from that point of view. You mentioned a point in your review, Jenny, about being considered to be the next Ian M. Banks. I'm not sure. I'm not sure, if I'm being honest.
Some of that was in the structure. It was compared quite favourably to use of weapons, right, for example. I must admit, I've also struggled with a lot of Ian M. Banks. There were one or two I like enormously, particularly Player of Games. And I had the same difficulties initially with use of weapons as I had with this.
Rob, if we were to ask you, which of course you know we are, what score out of 10 would you have actually provided for Ancillary Justice by, of course, Anne Leckie?
I'm going to give it a 9. Okay?
I'm perfect. Whatever you wish to go for, Rob.
Yeah,
that's the important thing. I mean, you know, Jenny's in a celebratory move given England's latest result against the French in the rugby. I thought that the 6-0 victory against Chelsea was pretty good from that point of view, and we had hoped she'd be joining us with a tremendous result against Sheffield United, but never mind, there's always Blackburn. Next Flash of them will be coming up shortly. Barre are playing this weekend, aren't they? It's Blackburn.
Yeah, we're at Blackburn on Sunday, yes.
Well, as we said on the last Flash of the Moon, we will at least be able to know how many holes there are in Blackburn, Lancashire, and whether indeed they can actually fill the Albert Hall. I would go 8 for myself. Jenny?
Okay.
I would go 8 as well.
There we are. And Rob, I know you're desperately keen to find out what is the next book of the month, because we've had a bit of hiatus, and to be fair, Jenny, Robin actually read this back in December, Ancillary Justice.
It was, you put me to shame, Rob.
It was all that.
You should be doing this.
Anyway, the next one is...
The next one is the first of the Inspector Montalbano novels by Andrea Camilleri. It's called The Shape of Water.
Well, I have to say, I've never actually read any of those before, so I'm going completely from that point of view. Rob, have you ever come across this Inspector before?
No, I've not read it, no, not so.
Apparently, Jenny, you said this is the first one, and he's just about to write his last one.
He's just about to write the last one. Be warned, Rob, there will be 23 in the series when he finishes.
Right.
you can catch up with Inspector Montalbano on the television.
I've seen him on TV.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, well, we are going to read the English versions, not the Italian version. So,
Jenny, you're so simplifying. You're so simplifying the whole thing completely.
I'm talking down to you.
So that's effectively 7.5 trilogies worth.
Yep, that's really right.
Okay, it'll come up on Fly Me to... Oh, no, it won't come up on Fly Me to... Sorry, I'm conflating the two things. I'm so used to doing the two things. I think, Rob, there's a Fly Me to the Moon that we're doing next week again, as far as if memory serves. Because it's the return of Steve McLaren.
It is indeed.
Which has got to be, the return of the Mac to...
Return of the Mac, yeah.
So it's just a little teaser head from that point of view. And you've been listening to Southside Broadcasting with the Book of the Month, with, of course, Anne Leckie at the centre point from that point of view. Jenny, we're going to be studio-based next time, aren't we? Because we'll be going out and about, I would have thought, as well, this year sometime.
I would hope so, yes.
Yeah, good. And Rob, how is Darlington?
Oh, yeah. Very good on the trains today, yeah.
So that's all we needed to clarify, because I just thought we'd just a random thing from that point of view. Book of the Month, we'll be back in February. No, March.
March,
yes. Sometimes, Rob, I feel as though my sentience has gone into a different rocket ship in a different part of the whole sort of sequence, basically.
We've got the wrong ancillary here.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, just
way forward. And that perhaps is the nub of the question, really. How human can we actually be in a world in which 420 million children are living in a conflict zone, according to a recent report from Save the Children, and 300 babies are killed every day in war since 2013. Very, very unpleasant reading, very challenging reading and findings. And to talk about this, and maybe, just maybe give some suggestions in terms of ways in which everyone can begin to help and address this, we're delighted to welcome Save the Children Ambassador and indeed TV comedian extraordinaire Dom Jolly. Good morning, Dom, how are you?
Yeah, morning, how are you doing?
Very good indeed, and a lot better, obviously, than a lot of our other fellow citizens on the planet, because this was a really shocking report. 300 babies killed every day in war since 2013. That is just completely unacceptable, surely, in any civilised society.
Yeah, and I think it's a symptom of modern conflict changing. Just the way that in the old days, I think it was a lot more, you know, army versus army. And now I think more and more conflict kind of encompasses everyone within it. I mean, I just went to the Ukraine, Eastern Ukraine, which is sort of Europe's forgotten war, if you like. And there's a kind of trench warfare situation going on there and in which kids are totally and utterly swept up in. And, you know, I met kids having to cross the front line every day just to go to school, and kids that have picked up, you know, as kids tend to do, shiny stuff in a field, and it tends to be something that blows them up and maims them. So, yeah, it is something very shocking, and it's getting worse.
Well, this is the point, because, I mean, you've talked about the changing face of warfare, and we have drones that, you know, obviously sort of be sent to maim and kill and all sorts of things. I honestly thought at the back end of the 20th century we were beginning to learn. I mean, obviously Princess Diana has had a big landmine cause. We were looking at those sort of basis. But, I mean, 420 million children living in a conflict zone, that's a fifth of children. That is not good for our future as a species, let alone kind of how we're relating to our fellow citizens on the planet.
No, I agree. And I think UK, especially, can kind of lead this, really. I mean, we need a sort of new strategy for protecting civilians and putting children front and centre. I mean, we had the last time we had something was the Protection of Civilian Strategy. It was last updated in 2010. It had no specific provisions for children or other vulnerable groups. So I think this is really what we're after, is for people to focus on it more. And I think Britain, through its role in the Security Council and stuff, can sort of be a leader in that.
Now, the Chilcot Inquiry, and I suggest you Google that for not a bundle of laughs if you want to look at various other bits and pieces. They actually recommended that civilian harm should be tracked and recorded in conflicts in which the UK is engaged in. Is that happening, or is it a case of we're still saying, no, we've got too many worries to deal with our Brexit negotiations to worry about this?
Well, don't get me on that, but yeah, I mean, I think that is one of the things, that no one is being held to account. And I think that's another thing that we can do, certainly the UK can do, is to try and hold people to account and make sure there are ramifications for people to behave like that. And, you know, one of the things I'd love people to do is just go to www.savethechildren.org.uk, sign a petition, and, you know, if you want to get involved in that way.
In the studio, we've got a wonderful crime writer, Jenny Finch. Jenny, you've been looking at some of the data there. Any questions or thoughts you'd like to add to this shocking finding, really?
Yes, apart from walking into what is a really horrific set of figures, yes, absolutely. And I think we also need to look at our vulnerable children policy and rescue some of the migrant children from across the channel. If they manage to escape, if they manage to get this far, we just leave them freezing in tents. I saw them in Calais. It's inhuman, and we need to do something about it.
Dom, again, presumably something else you doubtless agree with from that point of view. I mean, is there a sense that sometimes we can't cope anymore? It's just, or can you actually sort of share a little bit of positivity from the point of view of how Save the Children can obviously help in this?
Well, all I can say is that, you know, I've been to a Syrian refugee camp on the border of Jordan and Syria, Zaatari, which, when I started doing stuff for Save the Children, I mean, it was, you know, it was big. It's now just this massive, you know, the problem is still going on 5-6 years later, and people have, you know, kids have grown up entirely in these camps. But if they weren't there, then I don't know how they would cope. And certainly in the Ukraine, I saw stuff that Save the Children have been doing that was amazing. You know, kids who've been bombed out of their flats and houses, they've had their kind of social life split up. They, you know, find it difficult to go to school. They don't have a social life basically because of that. And Save the Children rebuild the schools, find places, community centres I went to, where kids and parents can actually go and sort of get away from conflict a little bit and just have basic normal stuff like, you know, I mean, actually, it being Ukraine, they were quite highbrow. They were playing chess and playing classical music, which is not something I'd see my kids doing. But, you know, just hanging out with other kids and basically having a semblance of normal life.
So what's the best website? People have been listening to this and actually want to take action. Where would you recommend they should actually go to actually sort of start at least registering their own vote and of protest?
Well, if they go to www.savethechildren.org.uk, they can sign a petition, and also there's information about all sorts of stuff that Save the Children do around the world.
Jenny, any sort of final thoughts from yourself?
Keep on doing it. It's marvellous that people haven't given up completely. And I think the thing about schools is absolutely central, because without it, a whole generation is lost. And all that possibility of passing knowledge on to the next generation as well, I think that's absolutely crucial, and good luck.
Dom, it's been awesome sharing some thoughts with you, good self, today. And again, keep up the excellent work. On a slightly different note, I have to say that we're rather like the parrot sketch with respect to the pythons, etc. Somehow I can never disassociate yourself from the classic, I'm on the phone, it's just a genius. You know.
I never actually said that, weirdly. That's
what exactly.
Like, everyone actually says, I never said I was on the phone, but that is my catchphrase.
I know. It's just a way forward. Dom, has it been an okay telephonic link for you? Has it been reasonable for from your perspective? This is our customer service thing. Has it been good for you?
I'd give it a 4 out of 5.
Yeah. Very good. Well, maybe hopefully we can return with more good news for Save the Children and more. Will you be kind enough to return later on in the year?
Yeah, thanks very much for having me on.
Fantastic.